It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Rod's Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Hello, Fairbanks. This is Randy Zarnke. I'll be your host for today's edition of Alaska Tracks, a program based on an oral history project conducted by the Alaska Trappers Association over the past 30 years. We've interviewed over 200 people from throughout the great state of Alaska. Program managers here at KFAR asked us to share excerpts of these recordings with you, the listening audience. Early reports indicate that folks are enjoying the program, which makes us feel good. Today's guest is a man from Dillingham. His name is John Nicholson. I say was because John was 96 years old when I recorded this interview and has since gone to that big trap line in the sky. John hunted for food for his family, but thought of himself as mostly a fisherman and a trapper. These activities dominated his life right up to the end. In past episodes of this program, we've broken the full interview into small segments, picking out the best parts of the recording. In John's case, all of his comments are good. Therefore, we're just going to listen to the whole thing. We'll have about 13 minutes of John's commentary, then take a commercial break before coming back with another 13 minutes of some fascinating stories from a true old-timer. Listen for his repeated use of the phrase, olden days, makes me smile. Here we go.
My name is John William Nicholson. My mother named me after my grandfather. Clark's Point is named after my grandfather. Lake Cox is named after my grandfather. I'm born at Clark's Point, 1906, at the Alaska Packers Cannery on the beach. I lived in Canoe Lake. That's an abandoned village now. There used to be cannery at Canoe Lake. Alaska Packers had a cannery there, and they abandoned, got too shallow. When my parents was at Clark's Point and Neacock, they used to let me go to school at Nooshigak, and I stayed with my grandma during the winter to go to school there at Nooshigak. But my life was spent at the Heacock Cannery, Clark's Point, while my dad was a winter watchman, and then moved over here where I live now since 25.
How many people lived here in Dillingham back in the time you're talking about?
Well, there was a lot of natives before 1919. Spanish influenza killed nearly all the elders. That flu originated in Spain. That's why they called it Spanish influenza. I had the flu 1919. They had it out in the States 1918. And then when the cannery people come up, they brought the flu. So we got it in summer of 1919. That wiped out nearly all the elders and natives. A lot of children outlived their parents, and there were a lot of children around here, so they started an orphanage here at Old Dillingham. The orphanage was here for a few years till those kids could grow up, and then they abandoned the orphanage. My mother told me that before I was born, there was an epidemic amongst the natives. I think there was smallpox that wiped out a lot of natives out here in Bristol Bay. My dad had the post office here at Dillingham. The school was ready to go over the bank, county erosion. When there was no school down here in Dillingham, they moved to Snake Point, and they called Snake Point Dillingham. So they built a road between here and Snake Point. So the Dillingham kids, they had to go to Snake Point to school with the school bus. And then my dad had to take the name of Kanagnak. So where I live here now, 6 miles away from New Dillingham, it's called Kanagnak. My life been salmon fishing and fur trapping. I learned it from a Yupik, how to trap. I was pretty friendly to the Yupik people. I was 12 years old when I first started trap.
the Yupik fella that taught you how to trap, did you just go along with him and learn from him by watching?
Yeah, I trapped the way he trapped. Olden days, a lot of white people, they go up river and start trapping, and the beavers were high priced then. Beavers were closed for a good many years, and they finally opened in 1927. And then I went up to Iowa, that's about 30 miles from here, with an Eskimo boy. I start beaver trapping. Beaver season opened in April that time and closed it in May. And the limit was a 20. But there have been different limits, 20 beaver limit, 10 beaver limit in Dillingham here, Bristol Bay.
How much would you sell the beaver hides for back in the 20s?
Well, a big blanket was worth over $100. But now I guess you'd be lucky to get $20 for a big beaver.
Did you use foothold traps or snares for the beaver?
In 1928, ready for spring breakup, I used traps. Later on, they opened the beaver season in January and February. Then I used snares under the ice. I make poles set, a snare each side of the pole. But if they come out with a kind of a machine, they call a convert trap. When the beaver takes the bait, the machine grabs the beaver over the head. But I didn't want to use one of those. I'm afraid that I'd get caught. Nobody helped me. But I was afraid of it when I was trapping alone. So I didn't buy any of them. I used to average around 15, 20 red foxes every winter. One winter I caught a couple of cross foxes. Cross foxes were pretty valuable.
What kind of price would you get for a cross fox?
Probably around $50, and the red foxes were around $20. But a few years afterwards, I got $150 for a nice red fox. When a fur buyer buy a red fox, they look at the skin, see if it's in a good shape, good color. Trappers used to go up river and make a living just by trapping only. A lot of them didn't go salmon fishing.
What kind of set would you use for the foxes?
I use number 2 traps, sometimes number 3 traps. I generally have one trap because a fox, they got a good nose. They can smell the steel. Some foxes are pretty smart. They just circle my beaver sets. But then I set a blind set away from the main set, 4 or 5 feet away. Sometimes I have 2 blind sets. So when they go around in a circle, they forget about that blind set. And I catch them there. They were smart ones. Fox is pretty smart animal.
Do you use bait at the main set?
I use bait. Most any kind of animal, like there used to be a lot of reindeer around here. They used to use reindeer fat and leftover meat buried alongside of the set. But I generally put the bait on one side. Wintertime is generally wind come from the northerly direction, and the fox always go against the wind, and while he's eating the bait, he gets caught in the trap. There've been rabies around. Thin out the foxes, kill them off. There used to be a lot of foxes, but very few left anymore.
What kind of transportation would you use back then?
Dog team. All my trapping was done by dog team. Even when there was snow goes around, I never used snow go. I had at least 9 dogs go out on the trap line. I raise them, and the big husky dogs, I drive them for miles every day on the trap line. I go out in the woods, haul wood. I burn wood olden days, work them plenty.
Did you have one main cabin and then go out to remote cabins?
No, when I go up river trapping, I pitch a 10-by-12 tent, and I done my trapping. When I trap foxes in order, I trap in a circle, a big wide circle. I look at sets of leaving the home, And then I make a big circle, and I'm looking at sets on the way home. So I'm fox-trapping, I'm out 5-6 hours. Fox-trapping I do from home. Beaver trapping I go up river.
It's up the Nooshigak?
Yeah, branches off the Nooshigak River. That's where I used to go. But then there was a few winters I trapped beaver back inland from where I live, and I come back home.
How did you catch your otter?
Oh, I set them in a little creek, shallow water, where landowners go up and down. They're looking for fish in those little streams. And for mink. When I trap in beavers, I always get a few minks in a beaver dam. They get caught swimming around in the creeks. Sometimes I set traps in their holes.
How would you sell your furs?
There was a local fur buyer at Dellingham. He buy a lot of fur. And then after he passed away, I sell my furs to fur buyers that come in from Anchorage, Kotlatskis. I took one of them upriver by boat to buy beavers. Went up Nooshigak River, 100 miles with the fur buyer. I come down with 800 beavers in the boat.
And that was in what year?
Yeah, between the 20s and the 40s.
And was he a pretty fair dealer?
Well, he was reasonable. Treat everybody like. But now it's not worth trapping. I guess animal lovers, I counted them the price is low. They don't like to see women wear fur coats. They don't like to see anybody wearing an animal skin. So that's probably why the fur prices are low. Animal lovers, they're hurting the trappers.
Can you tell us anything about your hunting?
There used to be a lot of ptarmigan by the millions all over around my house here. But now, I believe one of these days, ptarmigan is going to be extinct. The snow goers go up in the mountains before a lot of snow. And then when there's a lot of snow, the ptarmigan come down towards the riverbank here at Dellingham and then get a few, but the flocks are small. Lucky sometimes, 50 ptarmigan in a flock. They used to be 500 or more in a flock of olden days. They were all over. When I leave my house here, I see ptarmigan outside of my house and all the way upriver, never lose sight. I cross Wood River, ptarmigan this side, and I could see them other side of the river. There were by the thousands, millions. But my belief now, a lot of ravens around. And they eating the young ones and eggs. And my belief is the ptarmigan are going to be extinct if they don't get rid of the ravens. What puzzled me, I was down sewer, there was crows down that little smaller bird and a raven. You could shoot a crow, but you can't shoot a raven. That's silly. If they do a crow season on them, that ain't going to help. Ravens would be eating the eggs and the young ones.
I hope you're enjoying this session with John Nicholson as much as I am. Let's take a short break to hear from our sponsors. Okay, let's get back to Alaska Tracks and more of our recording session with John Nicholson.
How about fishing? Who taught you how to fish?
Oh, my dad had when I first set that in. He helped me set that down the cockpit. My dad fished in the 1800s. There was a lot of salmon. By the millions. I was one of the first set netters when they opened the season for set netting. I was 12 years old. I was a big husky boy when I was 12 years old. When I first set netted, I was only getting 5 cents for a whole salmon. I set that on the beach at Eacock. My dad built me a little skiff. When it's fine weather, I rowed the fish to the cannery. But to run the cannery, I had a two-wheel fish cart. I hitch up my 4 or 5 dogs and haul fish to the cannery with a dog team. With 5 dogs, ran a big wagon. So I delivered fish both ways, fine weather by boat, rough weather by dog team. I was big and husky when I was 12 years old. I lift 200 pounds lead bar. Canada had 100 pounds lead bars. The fishermen used them for ballast of the boat. Two of them, 12 years old. I don't think I could live 100 pounds now. And I sat at it till I was 15 years old. Then the Alaska Packers, they gave me a sailboat. So after I picked my set net, I went out fishing with a sailboat. It was in a gill net. It was allowed 150 fathom. Then I started fishing with sailboat only. I quit set netting. The canneries had a lot of sailboat. Two men to the boat. Canneries hired us to fish in their boat, and we got so much of fish. Two men to a boat, captain and boat puller. When it's fine weather, the boat puller rows the boat and the captain throws the net out, 150 fathom. Those sailboats hold 1,800 fish, fine weather, but when it's a little choppy, I can have 12 or 1,500 fish in a boat. They vary in size from different years. 4-year-old salmon, 6-year-old salmon, they get so much of salmon.
How long would you stay out in the boat? Would you go out and come back in one day, or would you stay out in the boat?
When you start fishing with sailboat, fishing a whole week, but then fishing game closed 1 day a week, and then later fishing game closed 2 times a week, 2 24-hour periods.
That must have been a hard life out in that sailboat for several days at a time in bad weather.
Oh, when it's too stormy, fishermen go anchor up the shelter side of the river.
Do you remember any big storms when you were fishing out of the sailboat?
Oh, yeah, like I said, we go anchor shelter side of the river.
And then just wait until it stops?
Till the wind died down a little bit.
Sometimes 1 day, 2 days?
No, sometimes half a day, 1 day. We generally throw the net out and then go to sleep. Take the mast down and pitch the tent, and we had a lot of reindeer skins. Them days we used the reindeer skin for mattress and blanket under the forecastle head. Kick our rubber boots off, sleep with our clothes on. But we were young and tough, we didn't mind it. All the sailboats were the same size. And sailboats, well, generally all drifter, but the same speed. It's not like now, some power boats are bigger than the other. If you go to sleep, they drift on top of one another.
You mentioned how you moved from the dog sled to the snow machine. You obviously must have moved from the sailboat to the motorboat.
Against powerboat. Superintendent at Eacock Cannery, he was against powerboat, but fishermen, they voted for power, and they got it. I still tell fishermen, go back to sailboat, you'll make money. Wind power is cheap, costs nothing. Gasoline, high price. And then the upkeep on the boat, when they get work done on a boat, it costs them a lot of money. That's money lost.
What was the best year you ever had fishing out of the sailboat in terms of how many fish you caught or how much money you made?
Sailboat days, salmon price was pretty low. The heck I got? Less than 15 cents a whole salmon. But when they start using powerboat, price of salmon went up. Over $2 a pound for a while there, but now the salmon price dropped down to 20 cents a pound, I think. Hardly worth go fishing anymore, too much expense on powerboats. Gotta catch a lot of fish to make any money. A lot of fishermen, they wind up in a hole, they don't make much money. Last year, I think it was 40 cents a pound, and a lot of fishermen they wind up in a hole. Too much expense on the powerboats. A lot of fishermen, they're on welfare now. Can make a living by trapping and fishing. Olden days with lots of salmon. My belief, nobody knows much about salmon. When I was a kid, my dad told me there was millions and millions of salmon. He's seen salmon up Wood River Lakes, over a foot spawned salmon. Most of that salmon is dead under the spawn. There used to be salmon all over, Flounder Flat, Combine, Coffee Point, out in the channel at one time. But now there's no more big runs. I call them big schools, that's all. I tell fish and game people that they got lots to learn about salmon. Nobody knows about salmon, not even me. I fished 65 seasons commercially. They used to count salmon with a hand counter. They count on one side of the river, then they go the other side. Then they go to sleep, nobody counting salmon. Wasn't accurate. And a lot of predators, too, they don't know about. All they blame it on the belucas that eating up young salmon. But there's the seals out there. But there used to be a lot of seal hunters, no more. Joe Clark over Clark's Point used to go out and hunt seal. A lot of marine life that's eating up young salmon. Fish ducks. And there's probably the draggers out there too. They drag anything in the drag nets. So there's a lot of reasons why we have less salmon. Olden days, there was a lot of natives that they like to hunt palookas. But Dillingham here, the young people don't seem to go out hunt palookas like they used to. So there's a lot of palookas around, about the hundreds. But over here in Bristol Bay, there's too many palookas. It's a village at Leavelock, there's a narrow river. My mother told me that hundreds of palookas, they eaten up a lot of salmon coming down river from Elamna Lake and Lake Clark. The Quijack used to be the main river for salmon, to be by the millions. But now, if they don't get rid of some of these predators, it's going to be years and years before the build-up salmon run on the Quijack. Before statehood, Fish and Game used to blame it on the terns. So the biologists patrolled in the river, and they used to shoot a lot of terns, and there's hardly any terns around now. They practically kill them all off. But then there's seagulls, too. Not supposed to shoot a seagull. They probably eat a lot of salmon, too.
Did you ever work for one of the canneries?
When canneries hire, we had to unload the ship, take the freight to shore, and coal. Both boilers burn coal or steam to run the machinery at the cannery. And we got so much, I think it was $150 for unloading the ship. Wages were cheap them days. A dollar was worth a lot. In my young days, buy a can of popcorn, 12, 15 cents the olden days. Now it costs over a dollar in the stores. I've hung salmon net, thousands of net. I used to hang nets commercially here. I started around the 5th of January, but I quit hanging nets commercially now. City wanted to tax me. I didn't want to hang nets for people and pay taxes on my labor. No, I could not.
Now, when you say hang a net, you mean make one?
Yeah, I put lead line and cork line on the web. Called it hanging nets.
Did you ever get involved in making boats or repairing boats?
I used to build skiffs locally, small skiffs, 10, 12 footers, and I'd go hunt.
What kind of hunting?
Ducks and geese in the fall.
How about statehood? Were you glad that the territory became a state, and were you involved in that debate?
Well, most people were like, territory become a state, but I had more freedom when it was a territory. But after statehood, the legislature passed a lot of laws I don't agree with. I used to be proud of Alaska. I used to talk about Alaska, my country. I'm born in Alaska. But I don't brag about Alaska. In a way, I'm kind of ashamed. I blame Juneau for that, the legislature. Now on subsistence. In the past, I think subsistence was all right. When there's a lot of game around, everybody could hunt. But they can't seem to make up their mind. Liable to be a federal takeover on subsistence, and that's bad for the state. My belief on subsistence, when there's a lot of game around, everybody should hunt. And then, when there's not much game around, villages have a hunt little meat. That could be regulated very easily. But now if people start voting on it, naturally everybody will want to hunt and eat game. But I'm afraid they'll wind up federal takeover. There was one guy in the legislature that I didn't agree with him. He didn't care what happened to subsistence. He didn't care if it was federal takeover. But I don't like to see the federal takeover. That's bad for Alaska. We should have our own regulation here, and we should do what we want to do. Other states have their own way. Why can't Alaska have their own way? That's not damaging statehood for Alaska, the subsistence. The last few years they've been arguing it. Nobody seems to agree. But I think it's simple. Do it the old way. Let everybody hunt and fish.
Did you ever get involved in politics around here? Were you ever on the city council?
No.
Any fishermen's groups?
Always have fishermen. They don't stick together anymore. I don't know. There's a few fishermen joined the union. They're mostly outside fishermen that comes up to Bristol Bay to fish. I subsistence fish, and I haul the fish up from the beach with my car, and then my daughter split them, dry them, and smoke them. So I eat a lot of dry fish winter time. I give credit for wild salmon for my long life. I eat lots of salmon, 2-3 times a week when I was married to my wife. The dietitian, I probably don't know a lot of vitamins in salmon, too. There's a lot of benefit in salmon.
Do you always have it the same way, or does it cook different ways?
All different ways. Fried, boiled, baked, different ways. I like to go ptarmigan and hunting. If there's any around, I still go snow going. I'm the oldest man around here go snow going. I do everything young people do. I'm still active. I trapped last winter. I caught 5 beaver in the land order. I still figure I might get beavers coming out of the dens. I might shoot a couple of them hit.
So it's been a good life?
Boy, it's been an active life for me. I'm an old timer. My birthday was a couple of days ago. I'm 96 years old. I'm the oldest man in Dillingham. I'm the oldest man driving on the road here. So I'm in pretty good shape.
Well, that was a tremendous interview with a man who lived a long and productive life. The session with John was one of the all-time best in our series. Tune in again next week when we'll share stories from another sourdough in the Alaska Tracks radio program.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Rod Saw Shop. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.